So we are Parakhaf. Today is the 10th of May, 2018. It is 25th of Iyar, Tav Shin Ayin Ches. Okay, and we are Halacha Day of Parakhaf. So as we get towards the end of Parakhaf, again, similar to earlier, you have the prohibition of molech / avodah zarah, as we discussed on Tuesday. You have the list of arayos. And then there's this, like, sort of hazy, what is it exactly about? That we're going to keep the chukos and the mishpatim, pasuk chaf beis, right, and don't, and therefore the land won't vomit you out, etc. So what? How would that happen? Well, selchu b'chukas agoy, you shouldn't follow the ways of the non-Jews, which I am going to send away from in front of you, and the land's going to spit them out. But amar lachem, atem tirshu es admasem. Right, and you, so I said to you, you're going to inherit the land. Eretz Zavaskala, so which you'll inherit, Eretz Zavaskala Medvash, Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Yigdalti Eschem Min Amim. I'm Hashem who separated you from the other nations. So I thought about talking about Zavaskala Medvash, but then I kind of got caught up in the next pasuk, because it says in the next pasuk, "V'yivdaltem mina behema tahor l'tameya." You should distinguish between kosher animals, not kosher animals. V'ina ofa tamei l'tahor, between kosher birds and not kosher birds. V'lo tishaktsu es nafshu sehem. And you shall not. Make an abomination your souls by with animals, birds, and other things that crawl on the ground, but I've told you to separate to become tamei. So I started looking into this lo tishaktsu business. What is that prohibition? So the truth is, if you open up the Torah, that you should not make an abomination. So I took a look in the Torah Tamima. Torah Tamima here, it does not mention anything really having to do with the Baal Teshaktsu. You should not make an abomination, which seems to be above other prohibitions. But it is mentioned in Vayikra Yud Aleph, in the prohibition with regards to Parshas Shmini. And there, the Pasuk is mentioned several times. And there, it is invoked, and that Pasuk is invoked, well, it's the same, really the same words, but that is invoked to teach an important din that is found in Maseches Yevamos. What is that din found in Maseches Yevamos? That a child should only be nursed by a Jewish woman, should not be nursed by non-Jewish women. There's a couple of other halachos actually learned in Parsha, in Maseches Yuma, it mentions Baal Teshaktsu, that one should not, when one has to go to the bathroom, when you gotta go, you gotta go. That's what the Gemara tells in Maseches Yuma, that you should not, which nowadays is, I think, different than the old days. You get the feeling that they only went to the bathroom like 2-3 times a day at the time of the Gemara, right? Or maybe up to the last, up to 150, up till indoor plumbing. How often would they do it? So you get the impression that it wasn't the regular activity. But
it was a job.
Exactly.
It's very convenient.
Right, so people would probably train themselves to not make this as normal as they do today. But anyways, so that's one idea learned out from this mitzvah. But generally, it is understood to be that there's seems like a specific prohibition about non-kosher food. So what is that special prohibition? Why is that? What is going beyond, above and beyond other types of halachos? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us in, here, I'm on the wrong page here. Yeah, it in Simon Pei Aleph that the Rama mentions, Chaber doesn't. Yeah. Yeah.
Does that mean kosher or non-kosher?
I think in this context it does, and that could play into this as well. I'm not sure. We refer to it as the tumah tahor. There is a little bit of the laws of tumah tahor and the laws of kosher and non-kosher. Of course, in the vela, an animal that is dead, that wasn't shechted, is known as being tumah. It's tumas nevela. So that's a real that's a real din, and that would then be applicable, meaning anything that wasn't shechted properly is going to be called tumah. But I don't think that that's... get the impression that, yes, when it comes to this, they're referring to the Tumah V'Tahara, and maybe that plays into this as well. There seems to be some specific impurities that comes from violating kosher mitzvos as opposed to violating other types of mitzvos. This is what I want to focus on here. That the Shulchan Aruch tells us in Siman Pei Aleph Sif Zayin, Chal of Isha Mutter, who Shapir Shkigon Shachalavti L'Toch Kli, that technically a person could have woman, human breast milk, O L'Toch Hayad, about Gadol HaYonik, Mishtei Isha Kionik Sharis, but if somebody is larger and, I mean, an older person above the age of nursing that goes and uses this milk, goes and sucks this milk, that's like sucking from a sheretz. I give some of the other halachos here, how long a baby should continue to nurse, but he stops there. The Ramah then comes and comments and says that im chadash, chalav nachris kachalav yisraelis, that it should be the same thing, that the breast milk of a non-Jewish woman should be the same as that of a Jewish woman. Umikol makom, he says, though, lo yaniku tinok min hanachris, that a tinok, a baby, should not suckle from a non-Jew. In efshar b'Yisraelis, if it's possible for him to get, or her, to be from a Jew, the chalav nachris mitamtam halev, umolid lo tevara, because the milk from non-Jews is mitamtam halev, causes some type of problem with, not problem with the heart, like problem with the soul, like it's going to cause some type of religious deformity, I don't know, the religious problem, umolid lo tevara, and will create a bad teva, will create a bad nature within the child. V'chein lo tochal hamineches afilu Yisrael is David Dvar Masur. And therefore you should not feed a woman who is nursing, even if she is Jewish, Dvar Masur, things that are prohibited. Now, we generally are prohibited from giving Jews that are nursing things that are prohibited. So we'll get back to that in a moment, what the Ramah is talking about there. V'chein hatinuk ba'atzmo ki kolze mazik lo b'ziknuso. And also the child herself, the baby itself, should not be fed anything that is prohibited, because that's going to be mazik lo b'ziknuso. It's going to make its appear when the child gets older. It's going to cause problems for when the child gets older. Okay, there actually is, I saw a footnote here in the Nishmas Avram. He quotes from a medrash that Antoninus was good buddies with Rebbe. That Rebbe and Antoninus were friends. And to the point that Antoninus, at one point, like the children were, I forget the exact story, were switched at some point. And Antoninus, and I think Rebbe Yehuda refused to nurse from Antoninus' mother. Antoninus nursed from Rebbe Yehuda's mother. And that's credited by the medrash of him later on going on to convert. Antoninus was able to had some type of Jewish milk within him, whatever it is that that means. But the opposite is also true, that there's then going to be a problem for it. So where does this come up? Most explicitly, where we saw this in our learning in the last couple of years, this issue of a Jewish child possibly or not, or refusing to nurse from a non-Jewish woman. Where does this? Moshe Rabbeinu. This comes up most explicitly by Moshe Rabbeinu. And in fact, when I opened up my Shulchan Aruch at home, there was a little note that I put into my Shulchan Aruch that I think we must have used this first year at that point, 2 years ago as well, when we talked about Moshe's din. So that is mentioned here, this idea of Timtum Halev, not nursing from a non-Jewish woman. So first of all, let's just resolve one issue here that the Ramah mentions. V'chein lo tochal hamineches afilu Yisrael l'stavet ha'asur. That one should not feed a woman who is nursing, even if she's Jewish, things that are prohibited. So what in the world is that? We can't give anybody that. So the Shach comments, kolomar afal pisha asur la, even though that it's asur to her, I mean, what's the discussion here? B'lav hachi lechol dvar asur. With, you know, despite this, you're not allowed to give her non-kosher things to eat. B'kol makom gam also, another reason why she shouldn't eat non-kosher things has to do with the baby. Well, what's the practical ramifications to this? If she is sick, if she is sick and the doctor says she has to eat non-kosher food, she'll only be healed if she has non-kosher food. The father shouldn't give the child to nurse from her. El Yasker lo minekas acheres Yisraelis. Rather, he should find another Jewish woman from whom to nurse. So that's the din that the Shach comments on this, right? That's what the Shach says. That if the woman is eating, now how long does that? How long does it stay in the system? Things like that. I don't know. These things are not so relevant bisman hazeh, right? Because nobody, we don't. There's very few foods that people are told to eat for their health. Right? I mean, there's plenty of foods that people are told to eat, but generally they're not in the kosher non-kosher market. And those things that would be are generally fed by way of pills, etc. I actually heard an interesting psak, so people here may remember this. Anybody here remember liver pills?
Yeah, sure.
Ah, okay. So I heard Shira Kefin was talking about this, that when he was younger, there were doctors that made children drink to have liver pills for some reason, some kind of deficiency that they had. It was just crushed up liver, powdered liver that was turned into a pill. So somebody asked for Moshe if it's... What? Okay, yeah, anemic kids, right, that's what he mentioned. So he said that somebody went and asked for Moshe about it straight up, right, can we take these liver pills? And he said, yes, because it was totally crushed. It was we call it davar chadash panim chadash v'smolikan is the terminology used, that there is, it's a new, totally new thing. It's crushed, it's like the gelatin, the possible gelatin heter, the same along the same lines. So for health reasons, he paskin that it was okay. You're also not really eating, you're swallowing, whatever it is, fine. But anyway, so that's what the Shach says here. But if a woman is having non-kosher food for her health, you should find the child should nurse from another woman. So the Torah Tamima comments on this. Torah Tamima, both in Vayikra Yud Aleph as well, I noticed in Shmos Parak Beis, comments about this line in Shulchan Aruch, this Ramah here, and he says that there's a Tos Sofer, and he simply says, V'chin lo tocha ha-mineches afilu nachri dvarim asurim. Meaning you shouldn't feed a minekes even if she's not Jewish, things that are prohibited. Meaning if for some reason she is going to be nursing, even though it shouldn't be that was done. Meaning if you are going to need a non-Jewish wet nurse, you should have her eat kosher food. That's the way the Torah Tmima learns it out. So I see here, at home I only have the old school Shulchan Aruch. Here we have the new fancy schmancy black edition Shulchan Aruch. And I see there's a little star here with parentheses. So what does he send you here? It's usually some kind of note someplace.
That's actually a very modern concept now. Because have you heard the expression that they're using now? You are what you eat. No, you are what you eat, eats.
Yeah. What you eat, eats.
Yes, you are what you eat, eats. That means that, let's say if you eat a cow,
yeah,
it's what the cow eats.
This is the same thing
that he's saying. If
the anyways, I see that there is a star. A star that, oh, there it is. I don't know. There's a star here that's surrounded by two parentheses that I can't find on the page. I can't find on the page where it goes to. All right. Anyway, I mean, there is another interesting. There's a halacha like that as well that led to the whole veal controversy, the great veal controversy of around 2002 or so. What was the great veal controversy of 2002? You don't remember? The Great Veal Controversy of 2002.
They weren't fed milk or something.
They're only fed milk. They're only fed milk and meat. That the only feed that they were given to eat, calves are not treated very nicely on farms. Right? It's, at least the calves are generally shechted. So they're only given, their diet completely subsisted of basar v'chalav, a feed that was milk and meat that was cooked together. Basar v'chalav d'oraisa. So there is an explicit din in Shulchan Aruch like that an animal that was completely only fed dvarim asurim over the course of its life cannot be eaten. So apparently this was discovered. I remember Shechter once mentioned this in Shir. that
you fed meat to a cow. They're not meat.
Remember the mad cow disease?
That's the problem.
Maybe that's why they don't do it. They did it. They were doing it. That was the feed that they were given. In order to keep the meat fatty enough, right, or light enough.
I thought they just didn't let them exercise.
They don't let them exercise, but, you know, you got to always beat the competition. Right, bioengineering, that was last halachas here. Right, so that's what they're doing. So the Shulchan Aruch passings that such an animal should be prohibited. So the way this was discovered, I remember Shechta once mentioned, it came in this year one day, he mentioned, yeah, it was in the OU, and there were a bunch of farm lobbyists that were meeting with Rabbi Ganak. Why? Having nothing to do with kashrus, just because Rabbi Ganak has connections in the Democratic Party. Remember, he's the one who had all the correspondence with Bill Clinton, but he has a lot of interesting connections. So there was a discussion about lobbying with some, and also this was just mentioned. By the way, what's the feed? Oh, it's this. And Rabbi Ganak's like, oh, but like, that's a problem. So there is a different journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society where an article is written by my chaver, Rabbi Josh Flug and Rabbi Ezra Schwartz. I think Rosh Hashanah came over to them and said, this is a problem, I need you guys to write an article on it. And they have an article, it's entitled Veal, the Other White Meat. But there's other humane issues with regards to serving a veal, like where Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about it. But anyways, that's for a different halacha day. Some other time. I think I believe the OU, they've enacted changes to the feed. The OU, from what I understand, over the last 15 years, they've...
Yeah, they don't...
Right, but they've changed the feed so that it will so that it accommodates these. That's what I believe took place. Okay.
What? I just say one quick comment. Don't think when they call these animals calves, don't think they're little baby behemoths. These calves that they shed, they weigh 400 or 500 pounds live weight.
Really?
Yes. They're not baby behemoths. They are nice size. Almost half grown.
Okay.
All calves.
All right. That's good to know. Okay. Now I'll know how to identify them.
I did a slaughterhouse room near my farm, and they shecht the calves, quote calves.
A shecht? Like they have a kosher shecht? You mean a...
Oh, sure, yeah. Rabbi Heinemann has a shecht.
Where? Here?
Oh, yeah. Vineland, New Jersey.
Vineland, okay.
Beery Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Shecht. Hundreds of behemoths every week.
Yeah, it's under Star K?
Star K, OU.
Oh, they all come in?
Whoever sends in the shofet and the...
All right.
They have their...
Class trip.
Oh, no thanks.
You're not the...
I'll forget it.
All right, fine. Okay, so this leads to an interesting discussion here. So the Shach has one other comment here. It says, also with regards to the child itself shouldn't be fed. So the Shach comments, Kolomar, Afal pita katana uchal dvar ma'asur min d'rabanan inav mitzuvah la'afrish. So that the din really is that a child who takes d'rabanan prohibitions, food that is asur d'rabanan, the father doesn't have to keep it away from the child, as we learn in Or HaChaim, Simen Shemem Gimel, Hayinu Medina, that's the simple halacha. Avon mikol malkam, but still you should keep it away from the child because it will damage him when he gets older. So it will inflict the heart, it will do something to the heart, and it's going to cause a tevara. Actually, do we have maybe here it will give you a nice translation. Spiritually harm him in the years that will come later on. So that's a very interesting shah. Why is that? Because what is the source of this timtim halev? Why would that be? Why would that be? Right? Other prohibitions, we don't have this idea of timtum alev, right? Only by this food, right? So why would I assume that that's a problem? Because, come on, Bruce already shattered that before. Because you are what you eat. So if you eat non-kosher food, so then that's going to be a problem. So what's interesting, right, and right, it will give me this thing, that's what the Gemara learns out. So wait a second. So the Shach says, not only will that be by Yisuri D'Oraisa, but it would even apply to Yisuri D'Rabbana, even apply to rabbinic prohibitions. Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting thing. Right, how exactly would that work? There's one further. So I saw here. Leibowitz has an article from the year 2007 about chinuch, about children and kosher things. So he quotes from somebody. I forgot if I could find it. That only things that are really dini derabanan, that are based off of D'Oraisa, was the Shach was talking about. If it's something that's a pure din d'rabbanan, that really has not related to an Isser D'Oraisa, you'd be okay. So what would be an example of a pure d'rabbanan? That being things that are a chashash of an Isser D'Oraisa, that we have to be concerned about. That's what you can't give. Right? An example of a chashash din d'Oraisa would be... I don't know. Maybe I would say Basar Shenesala Mina Ayin, right? Basar, meat that left the eye of a Jew, and therefore the concern is that you switched one for the other. Maybe that would be an example. But it's a pure Din Derabanan. Pure Din Derabanan, we might say, would be Bishul Akum. Right, Bishul Akum is I'm watching a non-Jew the entire time. I give the non-Jew meat from Keystone K meat, right? And I watch them the entire time. Turn on the fire. Put the meatballs. Put the meatballs in the thing, and cook meatballs, right? And the entire thing is under hashgacha, right? Am I allowed to eat those meatballs? No. Why not? Bishul Akum, right? I'm not allowed to eat things that are cooked by non-Jews, assuming, of course, that it's all the other disqualifications aren't applicable. Assuming meatballs is something that would be roi l'shulchan malachim, right? So such a thing would be a problem. So, but that is only a pure derabanan. Do I have a chashash? Do I have concern that the food's not kosher? No. No, the rabbanan imposed a stricture that I shouldn't allow non-Jews to cook for me because I might go ahead and marry their daughter or something along those lines. I understand. That's not what, right, but Bishul, the prohibition, right, the prohibition of Bishul Akum is that I can't have a non-Jew cook for a Jew.
Yeah, but what's the definition of cooking?
Ah, okay, so there's ways around it. Meaning a non-Jew could do part of the cooking. If I turn on the fire and they do the rest of the cooking, that's fine. But if I'm just saying if the prohibition of Bishul Akum is violated, that's not what we're talking about here. Okay, so that's idea number one. Idea number two, however, would be the idea of waiting between milk and meat. So the idea, how long does one have to wait between milk and meat? So what is that could sort of perhaps gets down to, okay, what is the concern? Why do we wait between milk and meat?
It's
a continuous
system.
So what is...
So it doesn't look like that. It doesn't look like meat after a certain number of hours somewhere in your system.
Right. So is there really a concern that I could violate an Issur D'Oraisa if I don't wait sufficient amount of time? Probably not, because milk and meat, it's a bit of a shaila out there. It has to do with the... What? I
can't eat them together.
I can't eat them together. How do I get Basar V'chol of D'Oraisa? If I take a cold cuts, what?
Beef stroganoff.
What's beef stroganoff? It has to be cooked together. Right. And even a cheeseburger, perhaps one can make a case that they're being cooked together. But if I just take a piece of salami and a piece of cheese and I put it together and eat it, right? So I violated not basar bichalav, I violated basar vichalav, right? Not milk in meat that it's contained together, but rather milk and meat, right? Which is only an issur d'rabbanan. So if I eat them separately, so probably that's the only thing that I'm concerned about violating. Probably only concerned about violating the d'rabbanan. So for that reason, one has the right to be makel with regards to children about waiting between milk and meat. So if a child between meat and milk, I mean that if child we had meatballs for dinner and all of a sudden the kid, I don't know, gets a bug in their head that they want ice cream. I don't know, such a thing could happen, I suppose. after only waiting an hour and a half, you say no, we wait. They say, no, I want ice cream or I'm not going to sleep. So they're putting a gun to your head in that case, right? So that's also a kind of sufficious issue perhaps, but there would be room to be makel under those circumstances, particularly.
I don't believe. Particularly
if there's already been a somewhat of a significant amount of wait between them, meaning in 6 hours we wait is probably a minute above and beyond the din derabanan of waiting. So one would have the right to be makel. Now, where things get really complicated is if when we only have one child. So all right, fine. Things really is when you permit the younger child and the older child says, "Hey, what about me?" Right. So then, if you want to go to sleep at the same time as Yosef, right? So then you could you could qualify. If not, you're going to have to wait.
Different communities have a different
language. Well, that's not necessarily an indicator, meaning it could be that there's different psakim about how to, different positions and how to pass in the halacha, and therefore different minhagim. Minhag can mean, I think we gave share in this last year between mincha and ma'ariv for the summer, right? You could divide the meaning of minhag into six different categories. Right? One is a minhag in that, well, we are nohig to do this. Like, this is just kind of became the custom that we do. Another form of the term minhag would be that it's a machlokas about how to paskin. So machlokas on how to paskin, so then different people are going to take a different position, so it's not necessarily an indicator just by using the word minhag.
Yeah, but
Okay, so two other points as we're beginning to run out of time. So number one, there is a line that the Gemara has. The Gemara makes this comment in Chulin with regards to the donkey of Pinchas Ben Yair, that the Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey was able to avoid Truus and Meisers. And the Gemara makes a comment, Hash to be Muslim Shil Sadiqim in a Kaddish Baruch Hu maybe to Kala Yadon Sadiqim Atzman Lo Kol Shekein. That we see that a Kaddish Baruch Hu makes sure that animals don't, that the animals of tzaddikim don't violate the prohibitions. So Kal v'chomer, Hashem is going to make sure that a person doesn't violate this that the tzaddik's not going to violate this prohibition. There's some kind of divine intervention to protect the tzaddik from violating a mitzvah in the Torah. So the Tziv points out that, yeah, the Gemara only uses that in the context of kashrus issues. It only says that, an animal Hashem makes sure that animals don't eat something, so therefore Hashem will make sure that tzaddik doesn't eat something. That's the context that it's used, and we don't see it used other places, so why would that possibly be? It's based on this din. Meaning Hashem will ensure that you don't violate this kashrus thing, because the kashrus thing has a further implication than just the mitzvah or not the mitzvah. You know, Hashem could decide, so to speak, whether the mitzvah will impact you or not. But with regards to the laws of kashrus, so the laws of kashrus has a real impact. I mean, that's just a physical thing that the Rama is talking about. And that's why Hashem will ensure that you don't violate, that it won't impact you. There is also a Meshech Chachma. What?
What's the physical?
This Tiptum Halev. I mean, this there will be an implication to you, regardless, you know, outside of the halacha. I mean,
yeah, but isn't it a spiritual?
Okay, fine, but it's a reality. I mean, it's a reality that happens. It's an impact that happens. It's not just, oh well, you know, Hashem will decide whether to put a weight on this side or that side of the scale. All right, this is something. It's a reality that will exist.
So the point is this language
of Baal Tishaksu, this language of Timtum Alev, that's what I'm pointing out, is really only used in the area of things that you eat, not in other things. Yes, we understand that all mitzvahs will impact one, and sure, but those would be...
But here it's actually telling you.
Exactly, right. The Mara's technical use of this term, in terms of it actually being an impact, is only used with regards to food. Yeah, that's right. So, what else should we do? Okay, so there is a discussion, this idea shows up in Halacha as well. But there's a long discussion here in the Nishmas of Ram regarding this, about children that need to be institutionalized for one reason or another. That if you need to put a child in an institution, and it's discussed in the post with regards to mental or psychological issues, so can you put them in an institution knowing that they will be fed non-kosher food? Right, so that's a very difficult question. The Chassam Sofer, starts from the Chassam Sofer, then works from there. So Chassam Sofer says, and I'm just quoting from the Mishnah of Ram here, that although by strict law it is permissible to hospitalize a child who is a shota for prolonged treatment in a hospital where he will only be fed forbidden foods, why? Because it's a child, right? A child. Nevertheless, our predecessors have warned us that these foods in childhood will dull the sensitivities in the heart and produce a mean nature. Therefore, rules of Sam Sofer, is better for him to remain a shota all his life rather than be considered wicked before Hashem, even fleetingly. So that's what the Sam Sofer paskins. So there is, and he says here, the Maram Shik, who was the Talmud of the Sam Sofer, rules similarly with regards to admission of a blind child to a school for the blind. And Rav Orbach wrote to me that his eyes, the Sam Sofer, do not mean that one must act strictly with one who is a real shota, who is possibly to cure, is very slim. He rules that the child is not going to be enhanced. So that's his shot. So everybody kind of works to then mitigate the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer seem to prohibit it. And then the tshuvas later on are trying to mitigate that din. So there is a tshuva from the Igros Moshe. Igros Moshe is an Or Chaim Chelik Beisim and Peches. He was asked about a daughter who's also below bat mitzvah. She was born a shota for whom there is no cure. It is possible to put her in a home that is run by the state where she will be given forbidden food. So Moshe said, what do we do about the Chassam Sofer? Moshe immediately goes to the Chassam Sofer and and explains that, that the Chassam Sofer wasn't discussing a child who was a true shota, but rather a child of low intelligence. So in a school where it's with specially trained teachers, such children are educated to reach higher levels of understanding. I mean, the school that the Chassam Sofer is talking about was where the child was just a low-functioning child and would have gone into a higher-functioning child. But it's possible such a child who is not a shota, but merely a very low intelligence, would be obligated to keep mitzvahs. So therefore, maybe it's better, that's what the Chassam Sofer maybe was saying, that it's better to keep them low-functioning, but to be able to observe mitzvahs. However, if the girl fits the definition of a true shota, so age isn't going to change anything. I mean, she's going to remain a shota all of her life. So here we're talking about just putting her in a... I mean, the Chassam Sofer is talking about curing the child. Here we're talking about... So really, Ravosh is making 2 points on, is that child might not have really been a shota. And number two, the hope there was to cure them to get to higher functioning. But in the case that Ravosh is talking about, that's not the goal. The goal really isn't curing, in which case, yes, it's true the child is now a katan, but even when the child is a gadol, the child is going to remain a shota. So therefore, Rav Moshe felt that it would be permissible to put them into that home in order to, even though it would mean getting non-kosher food. There's some other tshuvos as well that go along these lines. I see the Tzitz Eliezer was asked about a child low intelligence, childlike in her behavior. He ruled that it's certainly forbidden to put her in an institution where she would be fed forbidden foods, and should she already be in one, he would have to take her. He would have to take her out because. There, it's just low intelligence. It wasn't the fact that she was a shota, and etc. That's his tshuva. I see something here from the Malamed Lahoel as well, that if food is only an issur derabanan, it would be permissible. Why would? And by the way, most cases of not, sorry, I shouldn't say that. Many cases of non-kosher food, you can use the if you say I'm vegetarian, right? So even though we've, you know, I wouldn't recommend going to vegetarian restaurants that don't have a hechsher or anything, but generally the dinim are only going to be an issur derabanan. I know the bug issue would be d'oraisa, but generally, but the prop, unless you see a bug, the prohibition of eating it is probably only in it. I mean, the prohibition of eating unchecked lettuce or unchecked broccoli is only a din d'rabanan, right? If you see the bug, right, you risk violating a din d'oraisa, but the prohibition of eating it when you don't know if it's there is only a din d'rabanan. So most of these things can be knocked down to a din d'rabanan. So he would say, seemingly seems to go against the shach a little bit, that that he would permit it. That's in the Lamed Lahoel. There's many other. There's about 5 pages worth here of reading here, but I'll leave that to you to cover it some other time.
There's a certain dynamic in terms of treatable or conditions that are not treatable at a certain point, or given so-called medical progress, that later are potentially treatable. And, you know, if you have a child with has certain condition that initially is